All right, we've been looking at future events primarily in this book, haven't we? Because most of the book has to do with the future. Everything but the first three chapters. And that's a big chunk of the book, obviously. And so we broke it down a little further into, chapters 6 through 19, start of form a unit. Chapters 4 and 5 are introduction to the judge. They kind of stand alone. But then chapters 6 through 19 all have to do with judgments on the earth and the dwellers of the earth by God in preparation for the Lord's return that's described for us there in chapter 19. Now, about half of that section, chapters 6 through 19, about half of that sort of feature events that are going to take place during that seven-year period of time. How do we know the tribulation is 7 years long, by the way? Daniel chapter 9. It's Daniel's 70th week, and a week is 7 years, okay? That's how we know it's that long. So about half of the events in chapter 6 through 19, particularly 6 through 10, have to do with events during that time frame. And they sort of fall into three series of events. The first ones are associated with the breaking of seals. They're called seal judgments. They mainly have to do with war. That's God using men to judge men. Wars will break out on earth during that time frame, and about almost 2 billion people will be killed. One-fourth of the world's population. I think we're like about 7.6 or something like that now, in that range. Nearly 2 billion people will die from wars. First four judgments in chapter 6. The second series of judgments are associated with the blowing of trumpets, the sounding of trumpets. They're called the trumpet judgments. And the first four of those are sort of a package. They go together, and they have to do with God judging the life-sustaining aspects of creation and crippling them so that they don't sustain life anymore. One-third of the fresh water supply is destroyed. One-third of the sea life is destroyed. One-third of the vegetation and that sort of thing. So that second set cripples the ability of the earth to sustain life. And we don't have a number associated with that, but you know, who knows if you take away a third of the earth's life-sustaining abilities, how many people are going to die from that? There'll be a bunch, but we just aren't given a number. Then there's a couple demonic judgments also among the trumpet judgments. One of them is Laura's favorite critters, a little something about the size of a locust, scriptures describe, but it's got a tail that is like a scorpion's tail, and it can sting people. It doesn't kill people. It just makes you wish you were dead. For 5 months, stings people. And then the second demonic judgment is 200 million horses-like things. They're huge. They're big, the size of horses. I mean, John describes them that way, and so we need to understand them that way. And they can breathe fire out of one end, and they can, like, their tails are like snakes. They can bite you with their tails and kill you that way as well. They will kill a third of the world's population. What's that, another, at that time, maybe a couple more billion, 1.7 billion, something like that. And I don't know how long that judgment goes on, but we know from those two judgments alone, over half the world's population is killed, and that's without even applying any numbers to the other judgments that we don't have numbers for. So that set of judgments, the trumpet judgments, attack the earth's ability to sustain life, and then those demon judgments thrown in. Then the third set, which actually comes outside that window of chapter 6 through 10, are the bowl judgments, they're called. And in those, the wrath of God is finalized, and they are so devastating that you can't even survive them. The entirety of the oceans are destroyed. The entirety of other things are destroyed. And so they are so devastating that we think they must take place over a relatively short period of time, maybe the last month or two, something like that, of the tribulation period, because they just wipe out. There's no fresh water supply left to drink and things like that. So those three sets of judgments then, the seal judgments, the trumpet judgments, and the bowl judgments, finalize God's judgment of this planet. So those are the main events that take place. Also during that time, though, there are a number of institutions or people or players that are emphasized. And note that that's what we're working our way through now in chapters 11 through 19. We saw the two witnesses in chapter 11. We've seen the beast, the world's final political leader, come up out of the oceans there in chapter 13. We saw his associate, the final false prophet, in the second half of chapter 13. So they're kind of major players. And then we've been seeing in the last chapter or two or three here the destruction of certain of Satan's godless systems, and they're represented by the term Babylon. Remember the vision of this woman, this harlot sitting on this scarlet beast with the name Babylon the Great, mother of harlots and all that sort of stuff? That symbol represents, we think, the religious apostate system that will exist during the tribulation period. That's the woman. She is called the mother of harlots, and in Scripture, harlotry is usually representative of apostasy, false religions, that sort of thing. Well, we saw her in the first part of the tribulation period dominating the political system. She's sitting on the beast. She's on top of him. He's supporting her until all of a sudden the beast, the political system of the day, turns on the religious system of the day and destroys her. Remember that? Chapter 17. So we know how Satan's apostate religious system is destroyed before the Lord comes back. It's destroyed by the religious system of the day. But how is the religious system of the day destroyed, pray tell? Well, that's what we see in chapter 18. So 17 tells us how the religious aspect of Satan's world system is destroyed. And then chapter 18 will tell us how the commercial aspect of his world system is destroyed. So one is destroyed by the other. And then in chapter 18, we'll see what happens to the religious system of the day. Okay, so let's look at chapter 18. That's where we are here this morning now. So John says, after these things, and by the way, I think the first, the chapter 17, the religious system of the day, probably is destroyed about the midpoint of the tribulation period when Satan, when the Antichrist sets himself up as God in the temple. Remember that? That's when I think he turns on that system and destroys it. So after that, I think, John is saying here in verse 1 of chapter 18, after these things, I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority, and the earth was illumined with his glory. And he cried out with a mighty voice, saying, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great, and she has become a dwelling place of demons and a prison of every unclean spirit and a prison of every unclean and hateful bird." Now, we know that Babylon the Great is going to fall. We've actually saw that earlier, back in the earlier chapters. And so here we're actually seeing it take place here. And the whole thing now is being represented as just a demonic stronghold. Whatever this is, it is thoroughly occupied by demon forces that are at work on this earth. Remember in chapter 12, we saw a war in heaven between Michael and the good angels and Satan and the bad angels. The bad angels lost. That we think is about a third of the angels. And they're cast out of heaven down here to earth. So it appears now that this is kind of an allusion to their dwelling here now, that this system, Satan's world system here now, is just thoroughly occupied by and ran by these demonic forces. So that this phase of Babylon that he's talking about here is a prison for all of these demons down here on earth. And all the nations have drunk of the wine of the passion of her immorality, and the kings of the earth have committed acts of immorality with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich by the wealth of her sensuality. So the two primary factors in this aspect of Babylon are the kings, or the political system, and the merchants, or the commercial system. So that's what's left of Satan's world system now, is the commercial / political system that's left at that time. And it has become thoroughly demon indwelt and demon ran. Can you imagine life on the planet with those kind of forces at work every day in the commercial and political systems of the day. I mean, the political systems of today are pathetic, aren't they? They're horrible. Think of what these will be. They'll be worse. And the commercial aspects of Satan's world system will be likewise, will be demon-ran, demon-controlled, demon-influenced. So Babylon, as we said before, can represent a city, either the literal Babylon in Iraq or another city with the same qualities and characteristics, maybe Rome, or it can represent systems, Satan's world systems, religious, political, or commercial. And we're seeing kind of all of those now represented by this term here. So that's what's going to be destroyed next here in chapter 18. First thing we see here in the next several verses is an appeal to God's people to get out of that system and to not be a part of it. And it's always been a problem for believers throughout the history of the church to try to avoid compromise, to try to not become too much part of Satan's world system and invite it into our lives. And so the same thing will be true here. The few believers that are surviving the tribulation period will face that dilemma, that is, the one of trying to compromise or not with Satan's system. So the first thing we see here is an appeal to don't do that. And I heard another voice, verse 4, from heaven saying, "Come out of her, my people, that you may not participate in her sins and that you may not receive of her plagues." So a separation from Satan's world, commercial, and political systems of the tribulation period is the appeal here, just like it is to us during our time as well, is don't become too much a part of his world systems. "For her sins have piled up as high as heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities." You remember how this whole concept of Babylon was introduced to us? We talked about the origin of Babylon was the Tower of Babel. And remember what they were trying to do there? They were trying to physically build a tower to heaven so they could get up to God, in effect, on their own. Well, ironically, look what's actually gotten there. Their sins have piled up that high. So this system consists of enough sins on the part of men to, in essence, kind of build a pile up to God's presence, like they were trying to build physically back with Nimrod and the guys back following the flood. So to the degree that she glorified herself, whoops, this is verse 6, skip verse 6, let's look at it. "Pay her back even as she has paid, and give back to her double according to her deeds in the cup which she has mixed twice as much for her." So the principle of divine retribution that we've seen before is at work here as well in this judgment. That is, pay back this system for what she has done to others. And in fact, it's twice as much, or she's going to be paid back with twice as much judgment as she has meted out. "To the degree that she glorified herself and lived sensuously, to the same degree give her torment." So whatever is going on in the commercial and political systems of that day, it will be a tormentuous type situation. "For she says in her heart, I sit as a queen, and I'm not a widow, and will never see mourning." The Lord told us there in the Olivet Discourse that the days would be a lot like Noah's day, and that is, people are not paying any attention to what God is saying and what God is doing. They're ignoring him. And this philosophy going on during this time is the same way. "I sit as a queen. I'm not a widow. I'll never see mourning." People will think that they're not going to ever be judged and pay a price for this sort of thing. They will be ignoring the threats of judgment against them and will have this kind of a philosophy or this kind of an attitude. Now, here's the part that makes this hard to really understand specifically. "For this reason, in one day, her plagues will come, pestilence and mourning and famine, and she will be burned up with fire, for as the Lord God who judges her is strong." Now, somehow or another, the judgment of this commercial and political system, which is probably housed in Rome. Some people think it's rebuilt Babylon, but I can't imagine the financial barons of this age putting their money in some place like Babylon, placed as a dust hole. So who would want to do that? I think this is probably the city of Rome that's going to be this headquarters of the business and political system of the day. In one day, this thing is going to be destroyed. Now, how does that happen, I wonder? Well, it's not too hard to understand how a commercial destruction could take place in one day. With all this computerized stock market trading, now that stock market can swing all over the place in no time at all. I mean, in a matter of a few minutes, it can drop hundreds and hundreds of points. So something like that, I see how that could happen quickly. The burning is even harder, however, to understand. It looks like the city is probably in some way burned. There's some sort of a judgment on this Babylon, this city. Let's say it's Rome. Could be someplace else, but that probably is the best candidate. It looks like that city is going to actually burn. And all of the business base there, the commercialization systems base there, are going to be destroyed in just one day. No time at all. Now, what in the world, I wonder, is God going to use to do that? There are some things we know about that maybe could be used. It could be some sort of a nuclear disaster, either man-made or divinely made. I don't know. That could possibly happen. It could involve some other sort of supernatural divine judgment of some kind. God could use, kind of like Sodom and Gomorrah, although there it looks like maybe he used a volcanic activity to bury that place in volcanic ash. Vesuvius buried Pompeii in just a matter of a few hours, 20 miles away. Pompeii was 20 miles away from Vesuvius across a bay, and that volcano blew that lava across that bay onto Pompeii and buried that place 20 miles away. Something like that could be used. There's a lot of earthquake activity going on during this time. Maybe something like that is used. I don't know. It's hard to figure out how you can destroy a system and its headquarters so quickly and so thoroughly, and it involves burning. Like I say, I can see the stock market crashing real fast or something like that, but I don't know how this thing is going to burn, but it will. Somehow or another, God is going to burn this place up. So the religious aspect of the day in chapter 17 is destroyed by the political system of the day. Here, the political system of the day and commercial system is being destroyed somehow by God using some other means that we can't say with absolute certainty what it is. But the effect of it is seen next. The kings of the earth who committed acts of immorality and lived sensuously with her will weep and lament over her when they see the smoke of her burning. The political leaders and the people, the politicians benefiting from this godless satanic system, they will weep the loudest here, the kings of the earth. So whoever they are and whatever their investment is in the system, that goes down the drain. And they stand at a distance because of the fear of her torment. Why would you stand at a distance from this judgment, I wonder? If it involves some sort of nuclear destruction, you can understand standing at a distance from that. You don't want to get close to radiation, to nuclear fallout. So if that's involved, the standing at a distance makes a little sense. If it's just some other kind of burning, some other kind of destruction, I don't know why you would want to stand at a distance per se. But maybe it does involve that. I don't know. But they don't want to be associated with this destruction, so they're back at a distance for fear of her torment. And they're saying, woe, woe, the great city Babylon, the strong city, for in 1 hour your judgment has come. It's not only done in a day, the essence of it is done in an hour, 1 hour. So use your own imagination. You probably imagine it just as well as I can. Somehow or another, this city and these systems based there, commercial and political, are going to essentially be wiped out in an hour, certainly over a day. I don't know how exactly to think of this, but they realize and they see, that is the kings of the earth, standing back and watching this, they see that in 1 hour this thing has been wiped out. Wonder how long it took God to wipe out Sodom and Gomorrah. Probably not very long. Something like that, I don't know. And in the merchants of the earth, they weep and mourn over also because no one buys their cargoes anymore. All of a sudden, the business base is over. And look at the nature of the cargoes that they're lamenting over here in verses 12 and 13. Gold, silver, precious stones, pearls, fine linen, purple, silk, scarlet. These are high-level stuff, aren't they? These are the top-drawer things in the commercial system of the day. Silk, scarlet, citron wood, every kind of articles of ivory and articles made from very costly wood and bronze and iron and marble. You know, they're not worried or more concerned over the fact that you can't get a loaf of bread anymore. Nobody's going to buy their little ivory carvings they're worried about. Cinnamon and spice and incense and perfume and frankincense and wine and olive oil and fine fire and there's a little wheat and cattle and sheep and cargoes of horses and chariots and slaves and human lives. Look what they're trading in there. Slave trading, human lives. If you listen to the news, you can't help but know that there's a lot of that going on nowadays, isn't it? That business of slave trade and prostitution rings and things that involve people seem to be growing and getting bigger all the time. And here you got this guy, this crazy guy that owns the New England Patriots. I mean, what is this guy, a multi-billionaire? He's caught up in this kind of nonsense? I mean, my gosh, what in the world is happening out there? So all of the things that are the essence of the commercial system of that day go down the drain as a result of this judgment. And again, exactly what it is hard to determine. I mean, you can guess anything you want to try to figure this out. All we know is that it is hard and fast and thorough. So exactly what God uses is, I don't know for sure. And the fruit you long for has gone from you. And all the things that were luxurious and splendid have passed away from you, and men will no longer find them. The merchants of these things who became rich from her will stand at a distance because of the fear of her torment, weeping and mourning, saying, woe, woe, the great city. She who was clothed in fine linen and purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, for in 1 hour such great wealth has been laid waste. Again, they recognize the same thing. Repeated here a second time, that this destruction takes place in 1 hour. That's just hard to really get your mind around. And yeah, Joyce?
Did the twin towers come down in 1 hour?
Just about. Yeah. You know, you can imagine, I guess, if you took some place like New York City and kind of transferred it over to, say, maybe Rome, so that you had a financial center there in Rome with all the systems that support that financial system, like you have in New York, and you knock that all out somehow, everything's just gone. I mean, there's no way to regather it, as they're talking about here. All the things that they long for, they're gone. It's just that what's missing in this discussion here that would be helpful to us is what? What's he using? How's he doing this? You know, is it some sort of a nuclear involvement that the burning is? What's burning here? Is it supernatural fire and brimstone being rained down on the city? I don't know. We're not told. We're just told that it is going to happen and how fast it's going to occur.
We're assured that it's going to happen.
It's absolutely going to happen.
Yes.
God is preparing this earth for the Lord's return in the next chapter, chapter 19, and all these satanic systems that are really earmarks of his usurping and ruling this earth since the fall of man, they're all being wiped out. The religious one in chapter 17 and the commercial and political one here in chapter 18. It's just chapter 18 is a little more mysterious because we can't tell exactly what he's using here. What's the tool that he's using for this destruction? And we just don't know. But they recognize the same thing in verse 17. It only took 1 hour to lay waste to the world's wealth represented by the satanic system here. And the shipmasters and passengers and sailors and as many as make their living by the sea, they stood at a distance. Again, you see this same expression there in verse 10. The standing at a distance, I mean, that's kind of an odd descriptor, and it occurs twice. People don't want to get near this thing. They're trying to get back away from it for some reason. That's why I suggested maybe there's some sort of a nuclear... That thing sounds pretty heavy. Whatever it is. So I don't know what's going on here, exactly what to say. But they don't want to be associated with it in any way, so they stay away. And they're crying out, and as they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what city is like the great city? Clearly, this is the dominant city on the earth during the tribulation period. The Antichrist is headquartered there, which it seems that he will be, both militarily and economically and every other way. And the religious system of the day is what we think it is, some sort of an ecumenical gathering of various apostate religions, and it's there, maybe under the umbrella of Roman Catholicism, perhaps. It would appear that maybe that is the great city. The city of Rome is what's probably being referred to here, although there are other possibilities that are just harder to believe than it being Rome. And they express their mourning by throwing dust on their heads and were crying out, weeping and mourning, saying, woe, woe, the great city in which all who had ships at sea became rich by her wealth, for in 1 hour she has been laid waste. Again, 1 hour mentioned again as in verse 17. So, whatever the method that God chooses to use, whatever the mechanism, it appears that it is a thorough and complete destruction, and it happens very, very quickly. So, chapter 17, the religious system of the day, is destroyed by the Antichrist, and I suspect that that's very, very quick as well. Remember what the Lord said. He said, when you see that guy standing in the temple and setting himself up as God, run out of Israel as fast as you can. Remember, he said, don't go back into the house to get your cloak. If you're out in the field, don't go back to get anything. Just get out of there. So it looks like his turning on that system is very, very brief and fast also. And God uses whatever means here to destroy these systems equally quickly, it appears. So I don't know. I don't know exactly how to think of this destruction with what we're told here. But we're told enough to know that it's thorough and devastating, to say the least. Now here's the response in heaven. The response on earth we can see here is anguish. It's people mourning and lamenting their losses and all that. But what's the response in heaven? Ah, rejoice over her, O heaven, and you saints and apostles and prophets, because God has pronounced judgment for you against her. Remember back in chapter 6, one of the seal judgments was a picture of martyrs asking God to take vengeance on them against the people that martyred them, against their killers. And he said, hold what you got for a little bit. Just be patient for a little bit more, and then I'm going to do just that. And that's what he's done right here. He has judged this system, this earth, for the martyrs there, ones in heaven. And a strong angel took up a stone like a great millstone and threw it into the sea, saying, thus will Babylon the great city be thrown down with violence and will not be found any longer. You know what happens? You take a big rock of some kind and throw it into some kind of a body of water, tank or something like that. Poof, you get this big whoosh and it goes and disappears and that's the end of it. Quick, thorough, devastating. And that's what this is going to be like somebody dropping a big millstone in the ocean. And that's how this place will be destroyed. And there will be no repeating of the things that used to be normal. This will be the new normal for this place. The sound of harpists and musicians and flute players and trumpeteers will not be heard in you any longer. No craftsman of any craft will be found in you any longer. The sound of a mill will not be heard in you any longer. The normal sounds and sights of life throughout the history of man, that's all gone. That's done. Won't be happening anymore. The light of a lamp will not shine in you any longer, and the voice of the bridegroom and bride will not be heard in you any longer. People, these normal things like getting married, forget that stuff. That ain't going to happen anymore. For your merchants were the great men of the earth, because all the nations were deceived by your sorcery. And in her was found the blood of prophets and of the saints and of all who have been slain on the earth. So this city and the systems that are headquartered there are actually stated here to be, in essence, the source of the killing of God's people down through the years, and the mother of harlotry that was used to describe the religious system that we saw earlier is sort of the same thing here. This is where all this godlessness has originated down through the years. So chapter 18, then, even with the mysterious unknown aspects to it, make it quite clear now that the last of Satan's significant world systems is now destroyed in preparation for the Lord's return, which is what happens next. So in chapter 17, we see part of it destroyed. It's also referred to by the title of Babylon. Chapter 18, we see the rest of it destroyed, also referred to as Babylon the Great. And so by the time chapter 19 comes around now, which we'll see probably next time. Satan's world system is pretty much in shambles, been destroyed by God, or part of it, as I say, by Satan himself. Any questions or comments now over either one of these two chapters? Chapter 17, the religious aspects to Satan's godless system, or chapter 18, the commercial and political aspects to Satan's godless system? Yeah, Janelle.
Well, as you read, as you study the word, and it's like God giving us in real time, real life time, now, scenes or vision, not vision, but circumstances that we see happening now in the smaller portion, of course, that but it's like God giving us a preview of events that's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's true. I think if we are sensitive to these things from a biblical perspective, you can see a little foreshadowing in that. For example, Antiochus Epiphanes, remember, he's the foreshadowing of the Antichrist. People living in his day probably didn't think of him that way, but now you can look back and see that that's probably the case. Yeah, Dawn.
I think one of the real foreshadowings was 9/11.
Yeah.
Where they stood on the other side in New Jersey and watched New York burning.
Yeah.
And wept and mourned over this horrible thing that had happened. And also, New York is very similar to this in that with the stock market headquarters there, the commodities, all of these things are part of the system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's done in, and of course, it's called cattle and sheep and horses and carriages.
Yeah.
We know that in today's market, that would be, you know, what's going on.
Yeah.
But I thought of that at the time. I thought, this is just like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're mourning, and they're seeing it burn.
Yeah. I was in my doctor's office on 9/11, and he was on the phone talking to his daughter, who was across the Hudson watching those towers come down. And she was describing to him the towers coming down on the telephone while I was standing there in his office that day. So as you say, there's some people were standing across the way watching that going. It's a good little sneak preview of probably what this stuff here is representing. What I don't know how to say to you, how to think of it, is what form is he using to burn this city? And
I... When you spell history, H-I-S-T-O-R-Y, is his story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there are numerous, you all are citing a few of them, and there are numerous things like that where sneak previews are there. Some of these Hollywood movies are amazingly biblical in some ways. They don't intend them to be.
Mm-hmm.
But some of these disaster movies they come up with are probably indicative of... some of the things that are going to take place during this time, unbeknownst to them. So, yeah, there's some previews out there that we can see to maybe understand a little better what is going to happen. Now, we won't be here to see these things, so we can just read about them. That's all we can do. We'll be gone, thank God. We'll be seeing them from a whole together different viewpoint than the people down here going through them. It's just unimaginable. The Lord said that this is a time period like there's never been before and never will be again. He called it the Great Tribulation. It is the most horrible time in the history of mankind. Life will just be an absolute struggle. And it's kind of just impossible to get your mind around how bad all of this stuff will be. Now, go ahead, Irene.
Well, when I used to have to go to New York on business, I was there just shortly after 9/11, and the girls that were in the upper stories of the building said that they stood at the windows and watched all this happen, and they said their mind could not comprehend, could not process what their eyes were seeing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just beyond comprehension.
Yeah. Yeah, no one could ever have, you couldn't have written a novel about that ahead of time, and it been believable. You know, but then you could see it on TV. Now, during this little bit of time here, whatever that is, maybe a few months at most, maybe less, some of these destructions in the bowl judgments could play into some of this, too. I don't know. Because it just kind of finished. Those bowl judgments are called knockout punches. That's what those last ones are. Those judgments that are called bowl judgments, that I call bowl judgments, are literally knockout punches. So the earth is staggering before these occur. And these finish it off. These knock down the last little semblance of life and normalcy that you can come up with at this time. So whatever the nature of things are at the time, these finishes it off. So there's no real way to live by the time those take place. Remember, all of the sea life is destroyed. How many people eat from the oceans? A whole lot of people. Yeah, not anymore. I mean, all of that food supply is gone. Fresh water is gone.
That's the scariest thing, to think you couldn't have a drink of water.
Yeah. If you don't have something stored, and I guess the militaries will have, because they have enough left to get together for Armageddon. We'll talk about that next week in chapter 19. They must have some stored, because if you don't, you're not going to have anything. And remember, the angels said that that's a good thing for God to do, because people deserve to drink blood because they shed the blood of his children. And so the angelic host is saying they deserved just what they get. Was one of the reactions to these bold judgments.
All of those in heaven will be rejoicing. It's almost ending.
Yeah. Yeah, heaven's rejoicing and the earth is lamenting greatly. I mean, the loathsome and malignant sword doesn't sound like it's even all that much compared to the other things. Yeah, it's the third bowl judgment. When they poured out, that angel poured out his bowl into the rivers and the springs of water, and they became blood. I'm in chapter 16, verse 4 now. And I heard the angel in the waters saying, "Righteous art thou, O thou who art and wast, O Holy One, because thou didst judge these things. For they poured out the blood of saints and prophets, and thou hast given them blood to drink. They deserve it." And I heard the altar saying, "Yes, O Lord God the Almighty, true and righteous are thy judgments." And so the heavenly host recognizes the appropriateness of these judgments, but the people going through them, I don't know how they manage to survive. And most of them don't. Remember that argument I showed you there, that maybe 99.7% of those maybe die? Did I show you that in here? We did that in here, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. I show that to everybody I can. I wasn't sure where it was when the last time I did that. I get this class and Thursday mixed up at times what we covered. So at any rate, it looks like the death rate is extraordinarily high because of the nature of these. And these guys here, these knockout punches, they pretty much finish the planet and life on the planet off. So there ain't much left when the Lord comes back in chapter 19. There's a couple of armies that he's got to destroy, but most everything else looks like is already destroyed. And we'll talk about that next week when we look at chapter 19.
What is happening here? Vengeance is mine, I will repay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The apostate church is being judged.
And remember those three angels that we saw flying through the mid-heavens declaring to men the eternal gospel and a warning to come out of her before these judgments come. So God gave a warning to mankind before bringing about these knockout punches. I mean, there's still a last second, last minute opportunity. This is in chapter 14, verse 7. That angel said, "Fear God and give him glory, because the hour of his judgment has come, and worship him who made the heaven and the earth and the sea and the springs of water." So, and then the next angel, the third of three, says in verse 8 of chapter 14, said, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great, she who has made all the nations drink of the wine of the passion of her immorality." So even before we're seeing the destruction here in chapter 18, they're speaking of it as already having taken place in the heavenly realm. In fact, with the sounding of the seventh trumpet judgments, that angel says God has taken up already and has started to reign. So with the seventh trumpet judgment, the heavenly host is speaking of Christ is already having begun to reign. So it's a done deal. It's all over but the shouting. This is just wrapping it up. The seventh angel sounded, and arose a cloud, a loud voice in heaven, saying, "The kingdom of the world has become the kingdom of our Lord and of his Christ, and he will reign forever and ever." So at the sounding of the seventh trumpet, which is somewhere before these, a little ways back here, they're already speaking of the Lord as having taken up the reigning of the earth and have as taking back that kingdom. So it's a done deal before these last knockout punches. Yes, Jane?
But death can be a blessing for those who have become a Christian. You know, maybe things have been so bad that they finally, you know, woke up and, you know, chose to believe in the real Jesus. And so death for them, they'll still be in heaven. You know, it's only the unbelievers that it's not a blessing for, that death comes. You know, the believers will still be in heaven.
Yeah. Yeah, the perspective from the redeemed is altogether different than the perspective of the lost going through this stuff. The lost are just being ground up by it. And the heavenly host is rejoicing over it because God's judgments are just and true, as the angelic host is saying here. And so one is viewing this from a position of eternal bliss. The other is viewing it from a position of eternal damnation. And the opportunity to escape the eternal damnation was given even right up here to the last little bit. And they still rejected that, blasphemed God because of it, and would not turn to him in faith. And so the justness of all of this is pretty clearly seen from Scripture. Any other questions or comments about chapter 17 or 18? Satan's world systems, represented by the term Babylon, either in its religious form or its commercial form or its political form, are all destroyed before the Lord's return, which happens next. And he takes it back. Any questions about any of that?
Just thinking about when, remember in Iraq, and they were, these soldiers were in Babylon, Iraq. Oh, I've got mixed up. And they were destroying all these historical artifacts.
Monuments and stuff like that.
And I was thinking, okay, just a little piece. Yeah, it's a little piece of information. Okay. I don't know what I was saying. Forget it. Erase all that.
Yeah, now some commentators are pretty big on trying to say that this city here that we're seeing destroyed is actually a rebuilt Babylon.
Yeah.
There's some places in Scripture where Babylon is described as being destroyed and never to be occupied again.
Right here.
So that's that argues against that viewpoint. Plus, it's hard to imagine the Antichrist being headquartered in that part of the world where, you know, it's unstable, it's godless, it's everything that you wouldn't want to become a international center of finance and that sort of stuff. So Rome just makes a whole lot more sense to me than a rebuilt Babylon. So that's what I think, you know. I could be wrong, but it looks like that's probably what it is instead of that old, the old original Babylon. Any other questions or comments? Okay, we'll let you roll.